Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome back to Mads World. I'm your host Mads and I hope you've been enjoying season 10 so far. Thanks for your patience over the holidays. Your girl needed a little break after attempting to settle back into Aussie life over the last few months. I didn't really realise how exhausted I was and I've been feeling a bit like I have to go a million miles an hour or I'm going to freak out and realise I've moved home. But I have moved home and I'm all settled in and I'm absolutely loving it. So I hope you're buzzing for the rest of season 10 because I've been working super hard with some really incredible guests. So please stay tuned. If you're new here and you've been enjoying the show, please remember to subscribe, rate and review the podcast on Apple, Spotify or wherever you're listening from, as it's the simplest way to help out the show. Or just find me on social media and tell all your friends about it. This week, I'm joined by a big tech reporter at the Bureau of Investigative Journalism, what a mouthful, or TBIJ, Niamh McIntyre. In her work with TBIJ, Niamh investigates powerful tech companies and has published stories on TikTok's overworked and traumatized content moderators, organized crime gangs running crypto scams, and Amazon's sprawling surveillance systems. Before joining TBIJ, Niamh was a data journalist at The Guardian for 4 years. Her most recent article for Wired explores the dating app content moderators who are struggling to keep platforms safe for users due to the challenges faced on dating apps such as Bumble, Grindr, and Hinge. The piece sheds light on the psychological toll of their work, with moderators exposed to explicit and harmful content, including instances of harassment, violence, and other illegal activity. The job involves making rapid decisions on flagged content, often leading to emotional distress and trauma for the moderators. In this episode, we discuss her investigation, including the working conditions of moderators in the online dating industry, the challenges they face, how handling sensitive content is approached, mental health, improving working conditions for moderators, and future developments on the horizon. Trigger warning for this episode, we do talk about online harassment and abuse. Hello, Niamh.
Hi, Maddie. How's it going?
Yeah, really good, thank you. It's so nice to have someone from England on the pod. Although, are you Irish or English?
I was born here, yeah, but my family is Irish, hence the funky name.
I was going to say, Niamh, I've got an Irish friend called Niamh. So yeah, I was wondering. But it's the first podcast recording that I've actually done since moving back to Melbourne, which is huge. So let's get stuck into our speed date question round and everyone listening can learn a bit more about you. What is your favourite pop culture moment of all time?
I really love like really trashy reality TV. So I was excited about this question. Recently, I've got super into Vanderpump Rules, which is like a Bravo show set in the US about like really chaotic, messy, hot people who work in a restaurant in LA. And obviously this year it had this like massive, massive, massive cheating scandal that like propelled the show to new heights of drama. So yeah, I think that's my current pop culture fixation.
I love that. I feel like my friends are really into Vanderpump Rules and I am a big reality girl, but I've never really gotten into it. But do you know what? I did get into when Disney launched the Kardashians, like the relaunch, even though it's all about their careers and it's less like drama. I feel like that reignited my love for the reality vibes this year.
Yeah, well, there's a new series in January, so maybe that could be your time, your entry point.
My entry point. Yeah, I love that. My next question is, Can you tell me about a failure or a moment in your life that taught you something really valuable?
I think it's maybe not a failure as such, but just something that was pretty difficult was I've kind of for the last 2 or 3 years been dealing with some annoying chronic pain that like can't really be, the source of it hasn't really been able to be identified or treated really. So I think it's just taught me to be quite patient and like resilient, and it was really, yeah, it made me, you know, have to change a lot of things about like I've always been quite like a sporty, active person, had to kind of rethink how I did that. But I learned some really good kind of coping strategies for those difficult kind of moments. So I think, now I'm kind of managing it all a lot better. So I think I did learn some like valuable things, even though it kind of sucked, and it kind of sucks.
And there's nothing quite like chronic pain until you've experienced something like that. Like, not to compare my experience at all to yours, but I really hurt my back this year. And I think when you're growing up, I feel like your parents are always like, oh, my back, all this and that. And you don't really realize how tough it is and how frustrating it is until you go through something like that. And my dad's recently had his knee replaced. And, you know, I felt bad complaining about anything. I've also got celiac disease, so which doesn't sound annoying, but it is actually pretty annoying sometimes. But I was like to him, I hate complaining to you because you've had your knee replaced. And he was like, Mads, there's nothing like a lifelong illness or chronic pain. Like, he's like, I chose to have my knee replaced, but he's like, if you've got a chronic illness, like, you have to be pretty resilient and pretty tough. So power to you. Not that our experiences are comparable, but you know what I mean? It's just I guess you have to have a certain level of tolerance and resilience, so it's really admirable that you have that.
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of patience, I think. I've got back into cycling by increasing the distance that I was cycling like super, super slowly. So, which is, it's not usually in my nature to be very patient. So I think I've learned to be a bit more patient about things. So that's a positive as well.
Patience is a great quality. I think that's something I've learned through, I think it's just something you learn as you get older as well, being patient with people, because you learn that everyone like moves at a different pace. And even like, I always see this on memes and stuff. People are like, I hate slow walkers, or on Hinge, people are like, I hate slow walkers. I'm like, just go around, like, get over it. Like, sometimes I like to have a stroll. I like to mosey. Like, just let me walk at the pace that I want to walk at. Like, why do you have to be so rude about it? Do you know what I mean? Like, get over it.
God, that's so true. Yeah, I haven't been on that app in a while, but that is such a trope.
Oh, mate.
One of the, you know, the classic five isn't things it? That people say on a dating app, isn't it? Yeah. So unimaginative, guys.
Right. And I've just moved back to Melbourne, so I'm trying to test out the waters here on the dating apps, and I'm starting a new TikTok series where TikTok has to help me find my new boyfriend, because I decided I'm 30. I kind of want a boyfriend. I haven't had one in a few years, and I'm sick of not having a crush. I feel like my life's kind of boring at the moment. All I do is work. So I need something a little bit exciting to get me going.
That sounds fun. I look forward to following your journey.
Thank you. My next question is, if you could have a heart-to-heart with your younger self, what would you say?
It would be something around kind of be a bit braver and take more risks. I think I'm quite a risk-averse person. I don't really like to get out of my comfort zone too often. I'm quite scared of failure. So this is something that I'm still trying to work on, but I think it would be like, don't be afraid to sort of try things and fail, because I think I definitely was when I was younger, and sort of, yeah, it's something I'm still working on. And I think, you know, when you're young, that is the time where you can take risks and try things and fail. And I think sometimes I was a little too scared to do that when I was younger.
Yeah, I've got two thoughts on that. And the first one was that I'm in a position at the moment where I'm 30 and I've just moved home. And I think I was saying to you before we started recording that I'm hoping to like try and do creative stuff or do the podcast full time. And it's not often that when you're in your 30s that you get to sit back and look at those crossroads and think, what do I actually want to do? Because I'm not at, like, I'm living with my parents at the moment until I figure out my life pretty much. But I'm like, I'm not paying rent. There's no massive pressure. I'm sort of like, oh, this is such an opportunity for me to really think about like what I want to do. And it's really, really exciting. So I totally feel you on that. It's like you've got to capitalize on the times when you can take risks and still have a net to fall back into.
Yeah, it sounds like it's definitely a time to take some risks. And yeah, I hope it all works out.
I know.
But yeah, it must be a big transition at the moment.
Yeah. It's a huge transition at the moment. And the other thing I was going to say was things like what you were saying about you're still working on it. I feel like there's certain things in our life that everyone's sort of like, oh, you can only be with someone else until you really know yourself, or you really trust yourself, or, you know, you're in love with yourself. But I feel like that is a life's work in itself. And you're never going to get to a point where you're happy with the amount of risks you take, or I'm happy with, you know, how... like I have this complex about feeling like I'm a selfish person or whatever, but I feel like that will just stick with me. And it's like, you sort of just have to get on with things sometimes, like, and they are just going to become a life's work. But I suppose if it's something that you're conscious of, you can just work at that, you know?
Yeah. That's true. I think, being self-aware is one step, at least, even if you don't really take any action to change things.
Yeah, 100%. My next question is, tell me about a book or movie that has impacted your life. So this is a new question that I'm going to ask everyone on the podcast, because I am such a culture vulture. I read so many books. I like did my Goodreads like Wrapped this year. So it was like Spotify Wrapped, but it was your books. And now I'm like,
oh my God, how many books did you read?
So I actually read like 5,018 pages. I don't know if you thought I was going to say books there, but it wasn't 5,000 books. It was 5,000 pages, but yeah, it was like, I think it was 18 books, which is more than one a month. So I'm like, and I read A Little Life, which is fucking long. So, you know, I did all right.
That's good going. Yeah. I have such a love-hate relationship with Goodreads because I think I also use it, but I think it really incentivizes you to just read like a certain kind of like quite short readable book, because then you can just tick it or another one off for the list. And it kind of like, I read a book I read recently was like an 800 page kind of non-fiction history book, and it took me like a fucking long time to read. And then, you know, for Goodreads you're like, oh, damn, I'm really not keeping up with my tally. But I do overall quite like it. I think it makes you read. I do think it's good at making you read more.
100%. And I always like, what I find really motivating as well is that you can add in the page number that you're up to, and it tells you the percent that you're through. So once you get past halfway, you're like, right, it's the home stretch. I'm just going to get through and finish this one.
Yeah. I do love to gamify anything. So yeah. But anyway, to go back to your question.
Yes.
The book that came to mind was The Shock Doctrine by Naomi Klein. And it's a book that I read when I was fairly young, maybe I was like 18 or 19 or something. And it's about the history of capitalism and how it thrives on sort of disasters and uses those disasters to kind of embed itself. So she looks at like Hurricane Katrina, she looks at like all the way back to kind of Pinochet and Chile, like loads of different countries and examples. And I think it's been, I'm sure, you know, maybe if I revisited it being slightly older, you would see that there's some slight, you know, kind of oversimplification, because it is so broad. It like covers so many different times and places and tries to apply this one theory to it. And yeah, maybe reading it again, there would be some, you know, some critiques I might have of it, but I think it really, sort of, yeah, shaped my kind of early formative kind of political understanding, and I think it seemed like a really inspiring work of journalism. And she's the author Naomi Klein is a real hero of mine. So that's the one that came to mind.
That's awesome. You know what? I love when you remember a book that really shaped like a certain aspect of your personality, or like it defined your love of reading. And I think sometimes when you get into a slump with reading, it's hard to get out of that. I find that whenever I'm reading a hardcover book, because I just can't be asked opening it because it's so big. But like recently I was reading a book called Monsters by Claire Dederer. And it's sort of similar to what you were saying in regards to capitalism, because I find learning about capitalism really fascinating. But there's so many different opposing opinions that you sort of don't really know where to start sometimes, and you don't know what to believe. I guess that's like a lot of things with the internet, especially at the moment. But this book Monsters by Claire Dederer was fascinating. It was all about cancel culture and like if you can love the art and not the artist. And there's this one part about she calls them culture makers, and they're like essentially marketing teams and the people that decide what is going to be cool, like kind of like tastemakers, I guess. And it's all about like commodifying a person or an artist. So I guess in the way that Taylor Swift has made herself into her own brand sort of thing, and capitalizing on that obsession and like the concept of obsession, and using the pillars of true obsession, which is actually really unhealthy, and marketing products to people. And yeah, I just find it all so fascinating, because people will be like, oh my God, I'm obsessed with Taylor Swift, I'm obsessed with Beyonce, like whoever it is. And the way that they use that to sell things is so interesting to me, because it's like, oh my God, like I am a part of, and I work in advertising as well. So maybe that's why I found it really fascinating. But yeah, I just love when you're like, oh, I just want to talk about this book all the time.
Definitely. I think that's a marker of how much you enjoy it. If you're just boring all your friends with it in the pub, and yeah, I'm yes. sure I was like that with some books. Yeah.
Yeah, honestly. And my final question for this round is, what is your funniest date story? So this is something I ask on every episode, and it is my favorite question, and it leads very nicely into our discussion all about your investigation into dating app moderation. So what is your funniest date story?
I had to dig deep for this one, because I think most of the like bad dates I've been on were just a bit, you know, boring or awkward or inconsequential. But I did remember one that I went on when I was a lot younger and more chaotic. It was a bit of a disaster that. Because I had been at this really fun day festival in Sheffield called Tramlines, and there was this guy who I vaguely knew, who'd seen that I was going to be in Tramlines, was like, oh, do you want to go for a drink while you're here? And I was like, yeah, sure. But I sort of didn't really plan adequately for the fact that I was at a festival drinking all day, and then went on a date completely trashed. Oh, no. And he turns out had driven to the pub and wasn't drinking, so it was just a real mismatch of energies. And then I subsequently, but it wasn't so disastrous that he never wanted to see me again, because we did then go on two or three more dates. But on the second date, I kept trying to like wheel out, you know, my like funny stories and my go-to date anecdotes, and he was like, yeah, I know, you told me that last time. And I was like, fuck, so embarrassing.
Oh,
and then
no.
Our next date was also
so you've had
weird.
To pretty much repeat your whole first date.
Well for me anyway, he went on the same date twice, I guess. Oh, no. Again, and then on a subsequent date then also got a bit weird, where his dad had like a membership to a fancy private members club, and then the next morning he was like, oh yes, sorry, I'm going to go to breakfast, but you can't come because you're wearing trainers. See you later. And I was like, wow, harsh.
Oh my God. Are you serious? That's so rude.
Yeah. I know, right? Yeah. So yeah.
We didn't
last long.
No. I mean, good riddance. See you later. That's the thing. You don't want to go out with someone who gives you the ick when they do things like that. One time a guy tried to take me to Soho House on a date, and I was like, shut the fuck up. I'm not doing that. Ew.
I know. They're always really underwhelming, private members clubs.
Honestly, we used to go a lot for work in London, just because people have a membership because they can expense it or whatever. And when you're there, you're like, yeah, everyone here thinks they're famous and they all suck.
Yeah.
So you got in touch with me because you've written a really fascinating article for Wired through your work with the Bureau of Investigative Journalism. That is quite a tongue twister.
It is.
I would love it if you could just give us a brief overview of the article and just the key issues that it addresses regarding the working conditions of moderators in the online dating industry. Because this is something I had never actually really thought about. I just assumed that it was all done by AI because I assume everything is done by AI these days. But yeah, do you want to just give my listeners just a bit of an overview and then we can chat about some of the themes that came out of the article?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, just to pick up on something you said about assuming it was done by AI, I think that's what a lot of people would assume. And I think over the past kind of year or so, I've been reporting on kind of stories which are basically looking at the people behind things that, you know, people would think are done by AI, but they're actually often done by underpaid, overworked people in other countries. So I think that's, yeah, kind of an interesting starting point. But the piece basically looks at how content moderation and safety procedures work in the online dating space. So we wanted to try and take kind of a broad view. So we looked at Grindr, obviously the most popular LGBT one, Bumble, and Hinge, which is owned by Match Group, which they're like the biggest company in the online dating space. They own Tinder as well. They own loads of other brands. So we thought trying to look at three different companies, we kind of had an industry-wide view. And so we set about basically just trying to speak to as many dating app workers and particularly content moderators as possible. So we ended up speaking to around 45. And they were mostly content moderators, but we had some kind of executive types as well to kind of have a different sort of more corporate view. And what emerged really was that workers kind of reported they had a lot of kind of traumatic experiences at work because they what they're doing is basically either looking at kind of automated flags. So if somebody uses like a slur in their profile or, you know, a reference to drugs or something, they'll look at that. They might similarly, if you type a message that has one of those flags, they'll go in and look at that. But also they might be looking at kind of images and videos that people have posted that might contain some really like horrifying stuff. And then also, if you, you know, have a really bad experience on a date and you file a report about somebody who, yeah, you know, assaulted you, that these are the kind of things they might have to look at as well.
God, yeah.
And people said that the sort of impact of the child abuse material, the sexual assault stuff, other kinds of violence, it was like just really, obviously, you can imagine if you're looking at that on a regular basis, it really can get to you. So that was kind of the first key finding, just people are really dealing with a lot. The second key finding was kind of around some of the targets that people had and the time they have to sort of review a piece of material. So it could be that you have a set target of, you know, 120 reports an hour, and it doesn't leave you very long to kind of get through that report. I guess then the sort of related third point was around sort of understaffing and delays in kind of responding to dating app users. So that came up across, yeah, a couple of the apps, and could obviously have an impact if, you know, you've reported somebody, but there's a queue of thousands of tickets and it takes somebody, you know, a couple of weeks to get to it or something. That was a scenario that one person did outline. Obviously, sorry, I'm going to have to throughout give the company responses just briefly. And the, you know, the companies did, when we put all of this to them, they did say, we are sufficiently resourced, we have enough people, you know, the targets are set at a reasonable level. So yeah, just to say that that's, you know, their view, their view was kind of a little bit different to the one we emerged with.
It's also impacting the users like you and I. So I guess if you've gone on a date and you need to report someone, not only are you impacted because you don't get, not that you need like, you know, proper support back from an app, but you also need to, not that it's up to the person, but that person can go on a date with someone else. And if their account isn't, you know, blocked, or if it appropriate action isn't taken, then they're just going to go out with other people, and then there's the potential there to do that as well, which I think is not to say that there's onus on people to report that behavior, but the onus is on the dating app companies that are having this behavior reported to them and they're not acting quick enough or in an appropriate way.
Yeah, I think that was definitely a point we wanted to kind of look at, as far as, you know, these, the working conditions of the people doing this work was kind of, you know, the primary thing we wanted to report on, but also those working conditions, they're kind of inextricably linked to user safety issues. And we did review one report where somebody on Hinge had a bad experience involving, you know, an offline instance of kind of assault, and reported it to Hinge, and for whatever reason, we don't know exactly why, but that report was missed, and then only when I spoke to this person and they chased it up with Hinge did the person get banned, and that was nearly a year later. So you know, that was really a reason I did really want to do this story, was like, I think the big social media companies like TikTok and Facebook or whatever, they've gotten a lot of kind of criticism for their content moderation and their workers and how they treat their workers. But with dating apps, there was one other really big kind of landmark piece, but I think like there's a lot of, you know, dangerous stuff that can happen on dating apps, and I think it was important to try and, you know, examine what processes are there in place if things go wrong.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear about what led you to investigate those working conditions. And I'd love if you could describe what a typical day looks like for content moderators who work for dating apps, because you interviewed some really interesting people in the articles about their experiences, and I found it really heartbreaking to read the struggles that they went through because they're not properly trained in this sort of traumatic content, and it's just completely unfair. But if you could chat us through what the typical working conditions look like and what a day looks like for them, that would be amazing.
Yeah, sure. So as I mentioned, there's kind of a few different kinds of content that they'll be reviewing. And just so in general, the kind of structure of the teams is like there are sort of outsourced content moderators, so and they don't work directly for the dating apps. They work for a company, a separate company. They deal with the kind of entry level staff. They're the ones who are kind of typically in other countries. So in the piece we looked at, it was like Honduras, India, and Guatemala were big locations. And they might be kind of looking at people's profiles, they might be looking at messages, they might be looking at reports that have come in from users themselves who've reported other users for various things. And then there'll be, if they come across something that's a bit more complicated or a bit more serious, so, you know, stuff around potentially illegal activity, anything around child abuse or minors, they will then refer that up to the staff team who actually work directly for the dating apps, and they're more likely to be in the US or the UK. So it's a mixture as well of like some people work at home remotely, some people will work in an office. Some people worked kind of, they were on essentially like 0 hours contracts, like for Bumble. People would kind of pick their own hours, but they had to, and they were paid like a few cents per kind of report that they went through. Or other people are, you know, paid a normal salary. So there's lots of different ways of what somebody's day could look like. But yeah, the sort of the key commonalities were there among all those kind of the different apps and the different locations, because people were doing this kind of all over the world as well.
Yeah, and I find that really fascinating as well, because it's interesting. It would be interesting to know like any industry-wide or international trends that came through for the working conditions and experiences of those content moderators, because I think as well it'd be good to know like some of the specific challenges they face, because as someone who has used the dating app and as a woman especially, you know, I can't speak for the LGBT community and, you know, apps like Grindr, but the amount of just like disgusting behavior on there from men that is they're completely unaccountable for, and you just end up having to block them and deal with them yourself. It's like, you can only imagine that's the tip of the iceberg, you know, like I probably experienced the very like least level of that. But then thinking of, you know, how dark things can go in any situation, and especially on the internet where people feel this sense of anonymity that they can do what they want and say what they want without any consequences, it'd be good to know, yeah, what sort of specific challenges were they facing? Like what sort of things were they coming up against? I know you mentioned, yeah, I'd love for you to explain. I'm just making a lot of assumptions, but.
Sure. Well, I think, as you can imagine, a lot of nudes, a lot of dick pics, which dating apps have various different rules over, and like, you know, if it's non-consensual then they'll take action, and if it's consensual, I think some of them are a bit, you know, some of them are stricter than others and that kind of thing. So I think that's kind of a baseline. There's like a lot of that, as you would imagine. And then then I think a lot of the lower level stuff might be people just over message being rude or unpleasant or nasty, and so somebody reports them. Then it starts getting more serious. Things that people said they saw commonly was kind of like harassment, or people, if you've had a kind of like exchange of messages with someone and then it doesn't go well, somebody might try and report your profile maliciously, that kind of thing. Then I think the more serious stuff that people dealt with was racism and other kinds of bigotry, homophobia. I think, all of those kinds of bigotry, racism, homophobia, transphobia. I think a lot of trans people have a lot of issues on dating apps. Then people kind of using the apps to stalk people, harass people. With Grindr, there was a couple of Grindr has some really specific challenges around people, because, you know, obviously a lot of people using Grindr aren't out publicly.
Yes.
It can be really sensitive data that. So sometimes the app is used to kind of blackmail people, or to find gay people to harass, basically.
Tell me more about that, because I wouldn't even know that. I guess I'm obviously not a gay man, but I think is that something that is common to people go on there to try and find people to blackmail and to out them? That is so fucked up.
Yeah, it has been used in that way, and also reports of the there's quite a few, even in Human Rights Watch actually did some really important research on also police using Grindr in countries where homosexuality is either illegal or kind of a legal grey area to find people. So yeah, there's a lot of. Grindr has a lot of challenges specific to sort of being the biggest global LGBT app. So yeah, there was all of that, and that was something that people did say, particularly the moderators we spoke to. There was kind of a specific thing that came up for some of them who were LGBT themselves, because Grindr had made a well-meaning effort to kind of recruit people who were from the LGBT community in Honduras, where their outsourcing company was. But then some of those people said, when we have to see the things that people do to queer people, it hits harder.
Yeah.
Because it makes you think, it makes you aware of being vulnerable and how that could have happened to them. So yeah, that was an interesting thing that I don't think we ended up putting in the piece, but it came up with some of the queer members of that team. And then I think the most, just to finish off the question, I think then the most hardcore and upsetting stuff was child abuse. And I really didn't realize before starting the reporting process, but dating apps are, there's a lot of child abuse material on there, or people using them to try and talk to young people, try and groom young people. So that obviously that's probably the most upsetting thing you could see as a dating app moderator. And then also the people who the sort of staff safety specialists, the ones who they'll deal with the more senior the more complicated cases, they will have to deal with a lot of kind of reports of people talking about sexual assault, and that I think was the other thing that people said was really upsetting to deal with. So it's all a lot, and I think the thing is, I think interestingly, some people said as well, obviously there's the most horrible category that with the child abuse and sexual assault, but a lot of people said actually also just the low level stuff was quite upsetting as well, just the constant stream of people being bigoted or being nasty, or it all kind of built up was what people said as well.
The frustration you must feel to be seeing that and to be experiencing it and having no real ability to prosecute someone or arrest them. Police are trained so thoroughly in dealing with these things because there is such a thing as secondary trauma, and taking on board those traumatic experiences, they have to be so delicate with it. But these people are being paid what, 2 cents per resolution or something? They're not being trained psychologically in how to deal with all of these things. And I think if you look at the comparison of the onslaught of stuff that they're dealing with, even police, if they have 10 cases a week, and especially when you first start in the police, I've been told there's a lot of domestic cases and things like that. There's nowhere near dealing with 120 different real life cases in front of you in one day of work, and the amount of training they receive in order to receive that information in a way and process it somewhere externally. I mean, I'm not a psychologist, but you know what I'm trying to say. It's just, it's so sad. Like the amount of mental health issues that these moderators must experience as a knock-on effect of that work is just devastating.
Yeah. So another thing we obviously wanted to look at was kind of around what kind of support can they access? And it varied. It did vary. And I think that in fairness to the dating apps, it is something that they are aware of and have tried to improve over the past like couple of years. Because the people we spoke to who'd worked at these companies 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, some of them said, you know, there really wasn't anything in place. And now they all do have something in place. It's just that there were still some issues around.
As they should.
Access. Yeah, of course. Some people, you know, you could see a psychiatrist through your health insurance. You could, you know, access like wellness stipends that you could spend on things to kind of help with your mental health. And some of them had like a kind of on-site psychologist who you can make appointments with. But I think there's still some issues around, like, for example, Bumble uses freelancers, the ones who are just paid a piece rate per cents per message. And because they're freelance, they can't access any of that, as far as we were aware. And that, that I think is definitely, we spoke to one freelance moderator for Bumble who did have to deal with some of those really upsetting child abuse cases. And there was nothing available for him. So even though I do think the dating apps have worked to improve what's available, there's still some issues around, you know, making that accessible to everybody doing the work, whether that's freelance or outsourced or people on staff. So and I guess also just, I think as well as the mental health support per se, there was also stuff I think just around like building more breaks into the day that I think can be helpful. You know, some people said if they did get something upsetting that they weren't always able to just, you know, take a moment and kind of step away. So I think that could also be something that would improve your ability to kind of process all of this.
As a user, I feel like I would be, like, I'm trying to think of potential solutions for this. And I guess as a user, I would be comfortable with giving, like, scanning my ID or my passport in order to make an account if everyone else had to do that. And I'm like, it may be, because I think that the reason it's part of a wider issue, right? You know, people behaving badly on the internet. It's this sense of anonymity that people have, that they can say what they want, do what they want, and there's no repercussions for anything. Like, I think that was another thing what I was going to say earlier when you were speaking about just the amount, even just like the top level, like hateful comments or just rudeness or anything like that. Sometimes when you get too deep on social media, and I need to have a step back and have a break, because you'll click on the comments of anything, especially those massive viral pages that just have, like, they report on, you know, pop culture news or whatever, or like, you know, horrible stuff about wars going on and all those things. You go in the comments, it's honestly the most grim place on earth. It is honestly where hope goes to die, and people are just so rude. And I find it really, like, it's like, it's not even frustrating, it's just like disappointment that I'm used to, which is the worst feeling ever. And you're like, people suck, like, no one has anything good to say because they think that they can just write whatever and it's completely anonymous. So it's like, even on social media, I'm like, make me upload my license. If that means that this person with 2 followers and no profile picture can't go around calling people fat, yeah, take my passport. I don't care. Like, please sort it out. But what other solutions do you see to improve the working conditions for content moderators? But also, I guess, how can we tackle, this is the golden question, how can we tackle the wider piece of just people, I guess, it's such a big question, but what would you say is the potential solutions here?
Yeah, no, that is a big question. I think just on the kind of ID and verification point, it is something that has come up, you know, periodically when there's, you know, a high profile case of something going wrong on a dating app. It does come up. And I think it was actually discussed in Australia recently, because the Australian government's actually engaging quite a lot with dating apps on safety issues at the moment. I don't know exactly what the outcome of all that is going to be, but they're the government, I think, that's really trying to work out how they can tackle some of these issues. So I'm following that and seeing how that's going to play out. But with the ID thing, I think people who would support that would say, yeah, it would help, because you would be able to check someone's identity and kind of stop people, you know, if they've been banned. A big problem, obviously, is if you ban someone, the possibility that they could just get back on the app by, you know, getting a new SIM card or whatever. So there's that it might help with.
That's the thing. It's like, if you have the ID on there, they can't come back, you know, like, see you later.
Yeah. But on the flip side, I think particularly around Grindr, like, as I was saying, you know, that's such sensitive data, particularly if people aren't out. And I think I can see why, you know, at least in the case of Grindr, like, people would have a strong privacy case for really not wanting to provide their ID, and that, I think, that does have to be taken into account as well. So it's kind of, in fairness to dating apps, again, it's a tricky question to strike that balance between privacy for users and safety for users, and I think that's something that's still working. But in terms of, I think, solutions as far as like dating app moderators, I think there's definitely some relatively easy wins like there that could be implemented just around just paying people better to do the work. So the pay kind of ranged, obviously, depending on what location it was in. Like some of the Indian content moderators for Bumble, I think they were earning around $200 to $300 US a month. In Honduras, the starting salaries were around $700 a month. I think it was similar-ish in Guatemala, maybe slightly more in Guatemala. But, you know, it's like, it's really important work, and I think it could be better remunerated. And then similarly, you know, just dropping the more kind of strict or unreasonable targets, and setting those at a pace where people can actually have the time they need to do to get through things and give things the attention that they need. Because I think basically a lot of the outsourcing companies who are doing this work, they kind of grew out of like call centers, and they still have that. I don't know if you or anyone else, you know, has ever worked in a call center, but it's that kind of, everything is very strictly monitored, you've got really strict targets, all of that. And then when you try and apply that model, that kind of system, to some of these more complex, nuanced kind of safety related issues, I think that's where there can be some problems. And again, sorry, just to give the dating apps view, you know, they would say their targets are set at a reasonable pace, and people, you know, people have the time they need. But, you know, some of the workers that we spoke to kind of had a different view.
So perhaps, you know, letting new employees know what they're in for and properly briefing them in on the kinds of things they might experience, and then that allows them to, you know, at least have some kind of safeguard in place, or, you know, like different processes that can support them along the way. Because I know you mentioned that they have different mental health practices in place to support them, but probably like proper upfront training is just so necessary in these situations.
Yeah, it definitely did come up a little bit. I would say, you know, all the apps, they do provide training of some sort. And even, you know, if you're a freelancer for Bumble, you have some kind of remote training. And I think what some people said was actually like the policies that dating apps have in place are actually quite good. Like they do put a lot of thought into like policies and updating their policies for, you know, if like different forms of harassment or kind of bigotry come up. But particularly with Bumble, like some of the workers I spoke to there said the policies we have are good and we do get trained on the policies, but we don't have the kind of capacity to actually implement the policies. So I think there's sometimes a bit of a gap between, you know, like you might have really good feminist policies on things, but if you don't have enough people and they're all really stressed out because their targets are quite high, then they can't really put the policies into place properly. So I think that was training, that was definitely one thing that came up.
Yeah. Oh, well, this has been so fascinating. Honestly, it's something that, to be honest, I never really thought about it. Cause like we said at the start, to me, it feels like AI, because usually when you're messaging like a bot or a chat program or something on any website, you talk to the robot first and then the human comes later. So I think it's really, really great that you've done this investigation and it shines a light on so many people that are struggling and it's given them the opportunity to have their story heard and hopefully make a change. But I just want to say thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been really informative and you've just been, yeah, really great. Thank you.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, thank you. Thanks so much for having me on. It was cool to kind of talk around some of the issues and get into some of the stuff we couldn't fit in the piece. So yeah, it was really great to chat to you about it.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with the wonderful Niamh. Please let me know on my Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, wherever you are, if you have any stories or thoughts of your own to share. Also, I just updated my website and it looks stunning, so go and check it out. See you next week. Peace.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out for a chance to win the French Open title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV, live in HD. Don't miss a moment with daily live coverage and match replays on demand, beginning Monday, May 20th. Be there for all the unforgettable moments. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.